and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's still on a summer break, so you got me, Becky Friedman, in the studio. I've also got Josh and Justin. How's it been, Josh?
I'm just waiting for summer to finally begin.
Oh, summer to finally begin? Are you in the wrong hemisphere? What's going on here?
Well, no, I've been waiting to at least be able to take my boat out, and it's just been raining here while the rest of the country is on fire.
Oh, well, I'll be satisfied with that. I can forego a boat ride on the lake as long as, you know, we're not on fire. And Justin, how about you?
I'm just waiting for hoodie weather.
Oh, well, you know, those are outlawed now in most schools because of the secret vaping conspiracies that happen with the aid of hooded sweatshirts.
I have literally no idea what you're talking about.
You know, I mean, for me, it's definitely the end of the summer as a teacher, and I'm in all my back to school meetings, and the what is the conspiracy that kids will come up with now that we have to watch out for as people of school officiality? And yeah, apparently, you know, you can have, instead of your little drawstring, hood drawstrings, you can have a tube that allows you to hookah style hook up to your vape and then blow out your vape things into your sleeve. And this is rampaging across the country in all of our nation's classrooms. And it's what we must be on the lookout for, you know, kind of like vodka gummy bears were the thing that were going to be the downfall of education like 5 years ago.
So I'm going to open up a store to start selling hoodies.
Indeed.
This sounds like an opportunity.
It's already been capitalized on, so to speak.
This sounds to me like some school administrator someplace just like saw the stuff that they sell at like Spencer's, where they have the different kinds of flasks, and they're like, oh, that's what these kids are going to do. That's the trick.
It, you know, there's a really interesting overlap between what you think might be wacko conspiracy theorists and school administrators.
Yeah.
And I have to...
That's not reassuring.
I have to... but it's only in terms of things that the kids might do in their classrooms that are illicit. And once you can get past that, like, there are some really, like, well-minded individuals. But for some reason, for, like, I don't know, like, I want to say 7% of one's brain power dedicated to back to school things, of getting everything ready for our children to come back and be, you know, back into their routines and have nutrition and have sports and activities and awesome learning. There's like 7% of brain power that somehow is seized upon by conspiracy theorists. And it's, if I ever become an administrator, it'll be my job to ride that line really close and make sure I never fall into the conspiracy theory 7% of, you know,
so
brain power.
I'm not pro vaping. I mean, basically, I don't like smoking, but vaping, I know, helps against that. But I don't. What is it the big bad that's going to happen because of this that kids are allowed?
I think it's the underageness.
It's like a tobacco product.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
on
nicotine
a,
in it.
On a school campus, and
you can OD and get on your fingers.
Yeah, so I mean, if you see it, you call it out, but you don't freak out about it before it actually happens.
Yeah, you don't create rules based on your outlier circumstances,
yeah,
right?
Your weird rubber tube through the hoodie sleeve thing, I don't think that's a thing.
It's
it wasn't. Now it is going to become.
Yeah, now it's a thing.
So in the realm of atheism and the non-religious folks who may or may not be falling to the conspiracies of what kids will do in the classrooms, but in general, the non-religious folks have, hey, been recognized by a major political party in the United States. Did you guys ever think that this day would occur?
And not in a bad way.
Yeah. So the Democratic National Committee just last month adopted a resolution that recognizes non-believers for their positive contributions to the party and society in general. Be still, my heart. The resolution embraces the value, ethical soundness, and importance of the religiously unaffiliated, characterizing the demographic as a group of Americans who contribute in innumerable ways to the arts, sciences, medicine, business, law, the military, their communities, the success of the party, and prosperity of the nation. Look at all the things that we do awesome at, guys. No? Okay. Well, I'll continue. The DNC also acknowledged that non-believers should be represented, included, and heard by the Democratic Party. Thanks for that little hat tip, I guess. and honored that the religiously unaffiliated Americans advocate for rational public policy based on sound science and universal humanistic values. The resolution was adopted unanimously, except for one abstaining member. Non-religious individuals make up about one quarter of the U.S. population, with one third of those identifying as Democrats and about half identifying as politically independent. I'm like, this is kind of really cool. Finally, you know, this comes to us through Secular Coalition for America, which is a big coalition of lots of different advocacy groups. And they worked hard on actually getting this, you know, in and getting us recognized within a major political party. I mean, to counter that, the GOP is explicitly Christian and religious in a lot of their state level, you know, documents and guiding, you know, guiding documents and things like that.
It's nice that they finally woke up. They're finally saying, like, this is a small thing, but they're finally saying something.
And yeah. It is exceedingly positive. Did you see that real list of big things that we do that are awesome, apparently?
Yeah, I want to start a Deadpool for when they're going to backtrack on this. The closer we get to Election Day, they're going to backtrack on this.
What makes you think that, Josh?
Oh, because it happens every time. Every politician that ever sits there and says anything towards positive towards atheism or non-religion, anybody that doesn't practice any kind of religion, eventually tends to back away from that position when it gets closer to any kind of election.
Do you think that that's the case even now that we have a secular caucus within, you know, within Congress and within the Democratic Party as well? I mean, we got McNerney and Raskin and, you know, folks that really are willing to be out there saying, I am in a pro-secular caucus. You know, like there's an LGBT caucus and a Black caucus and other affinity groups. You know, we've got that here for those that are non-religious and unaffiliated or wanting to promote those kinds of secular values. You think, you know, even with that existence, we'll still have this acknowledgement scrapped?
Yeah, they're gonna walk away from it. I'm calling that.
That the gauntlet has been thrown down. The DNC has been challenged. They can't walk away now, or else they're gonna prove Josh right.
Yeah, for certain. I thought it was interesting that they talked about universal humanistic values because, I mean, I as a secular humanist, that has a very specific meaning. It's the values of humanism, but heeding to nothing supernatural, no belief in anything supernatural, whether it be God or any other kind of like weirdo power, right? But here, it's recognizing that those things that make up humanism are universal and universally accepted and valued, even without the person espousing them believing in God.
Yeah, you've been seeing a lot of noises being made in like the Pete Buttigieg camp, kind of like reclaiming the Christianity. Moniker in one of the debates, or trying to reclaim the Christianity moniker. Some parts of like the quote-unquote Christian left pushing against some of this like Christian nationalism. We've talked about that on the show before,
right?
So perhaps this is some sort of recognition of that. Maybe we have enough folks that are hopefully we have enough folks that are finally realizing that there's a reason to keep church and state separate, and maybe this is a step in that direction.
Well, and even when we're keeping church and state separate, I mean, this list that says that we have, you know, sound, you know, reasonable policy that's based in science, all of these places where non-religious individuals contribute, arts and sciences and medicine, military, I mean, that's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. For a Democratic Party to say that there are major positive contributions to the military where, you know,
it turns
6 years
ago, there actually
ago,
are some atheists and foxholes.
Oh, yes, for certain. You know, and where 6 years ago, the party members that were elected officials on the armed services committees weren't even willing to entertain the idea that humanistic chaplains were something that would be beneficial or helpful or even needed within a military, to now say, hey, we recognize that you're in the military and you're there and you make important contributions. How does that make you feel, Josh, as a veteran?
Well, they still don't have humanistic chaplains.
So you're holding out for that until you give any kind of little positive nod.
I've been let down before by the DNC. So
why did you hurt Josh, DNC? Why have you done this?
We'll just have to find out. So there are, you know, as we've talked about, Christian nationalists and liberal Christians that are pushing back against that. But we haven't really talked much about Christian Scientists on the show in quite some time. The U.S. Justice Department has indicted a former Christian Science leader and charged him with committing bank and wire fraud to the tune of $11.4 million. Former board chair of L.A.'s Fifth Church of Christ Scientist, Charles Thomas Sebesta, is said to have used funds he swindled through church accounts to purchase a $2 million home in Huntington Beach and an exclusive Disneyland Dining Club membership, among other personal expenses. He also allegedly stole just under $35,000 from a private school that also employed him. Sebesta has been charged with 6 counts of wire fraud, 5 counts of bank fraud, and 2 counts of aggravated identity theft.
From what I see, this guy only did one thing wrong. One thing.
What? There's all these counts? Yeah. There's $2 million?
Check this out. Check this out. So the one thing he did wrong, he was a member of LA's Fifth Church of Christ Scientist. He should have been a member of LA's Fifth Church of Christ Accountant.
So, you know, all of those things, you know, that wasn't recognized in the innumerable contributions to society. We have science and arts right. and the military, but no accounting.
Yeah, how handy are we with calculators? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, apparently handy enough to swindle $11.5 million, right?
Yeah, this story really makes me sad because it's like not only we can have a discussion over whether or not churches should be taxed. I happen to believe that they should. Some people believe they shouldn't. But this guy is then in a non-taxed organization, just stealing from the other people in the organization. If anything, the people in that church should be more mad about this than we are.
I hope they are.
I mean, there's been a lot of instances where, I mean, the Catholic Church had people steal from it, like those nuns that stole from the Catholic Church, and they really just didn't want to press charges or anything like that. So maybe they won't.
Nuns just want to have fun.
That's a song that I've never heard before. Well, you know, I don't know if this is the actual Christian Science Church that is pushing this for the most part, since this is the Justice Department that is looking at, you know, major financial crimes. When you start swindling money and writing different, you know, checks from different accounts like this to try and hide your, you know, your activity, it's not just going to be your own church members that are going to be wanting to get in on that. That's going to be some you know, government, you know, Justice Department heaviness coming in. And because in a tax-free environment such as a church, you know, someone swindling that, the government's missing out on a huge sum of money that the person could be paying if they were actually earning this money through legitimate means.
Right. Well, right.
Okay, so what's also amazing about this is that so he was able to steal $11.4 million. And this is the Fifth Church of Christ of LA.
Well, like, you know, the first three, they were you know, eliminated through sabotage. The fourth one, 24 hours after being built, just disappeared and went through time. And the Fifth Church of Christ Scientists is our last best hope for peace. Oh, wait, no, sorry. Yeah, that's Babylon 5.
I didn't know exactly
5.
Where you were going with that. That was funny.
That's definitely Babylon 5 and not a big, weird church in L.A.
I mean, how much money is this church making that it doesn't notice $11.4 million just going away?
That's a really good question. Like, I mean, this is dating back to like 2005.
So it adds up over time. So, but okay.
Still.
But enough that he can grant himself his own house. This Disneyland dining club thing is kind of really funny. It's so that you can wine and dine in this private club, entertainers and sports officials. And I mean, so I'm getting little flavors of Scientology here,
you
right?
Meet celebrities, essentially.
Exactly.
Right.
How much is this membership?
I don't know. Some portion of $11.5 million.
Yeah.
And I love how this like $35,000 that is stolen from the school is sort of like pegged on there additionally, because it just goes to show, doesn't matter if you're a private school or a public school, you know, $11.5 million is a big chunk of money for a church. What's the equivalent big chunk of money for an educational institution? $35,000.
That's about a salary, right? Well, maybe not a salary in LA.
Certainly not in LA, but hey, when I first started teaching, I actually did not make $35K.
Right.
My very first year teaching in teaching middle school, but for whatever reason, this guy is hopefully going to be able to have his comeuppance with the U.S. Justice Department. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. you can email us at atheist.radio, questions@atheist.radio, and find all of our episodes there. We'll be back after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Oh man, it's been a while since I've heard this theme music. It's the one we use for all of the best words. The best words spoken by none other than Donald Trump. It's our best angry music that we have, I think, because you know what? The stuff that comes after out of Donald Trump's mouth makes me angry. It's kind of real ridiculous. And this has to do with some hurricanes. Now, Justin, you, as a former Floridian,
dun, da, da, da.
You have some experience with hurricanes.
Yes, I do.
Right now, our friends in the Southeast are definitely either preparing or experiencing the effects of Hurricane Dorian. Folks in the Bahamas have already had this Category 5 storm blow through their islands. And what do we get instead of actual leadership? We've got, as Hurricane Dorian bears down on the Bahamas and approaches the Florida coast as a Category 5 storm, we got our president stating at a FEMA headquarters briefing that he wasn't actually sure he'd ever even heard of a storm of that designation, saying that all he knew is that the storm is possibly the biggest and that Category 5 is the ultimate. I don't know if he actually used that intonation, but that's what it says in my mind. So Trump has uttered similar statements reflecting his belief that Category 5 hurricanes are unprecedented weather events that either he or others had never heard of or witnessed. Before Hurricanes Irma and Maria hit Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, Trump asserted that he never even knew such strong storms existed. He expanded on that claim in October 2017 when he said that nobody had ever heard of a Category 5 storm hitting land. Dorian marks the fourth time during Trump's presidency that a Category 5 hurricane has formed in the Atlantic, and a total of 35 such storms have been recorded in the North Atlantic since 1924. You getting a little feeling of deja vu here, guys? I think, like, literally 2 years ago, we talked about how Trump said, nobody knew that Category 5 was a thing. This is the biggest thing. It's the ultimate thing.
Yeah, breaking news. Our president isn't very bright. I'm sorry. Does anybody need to sit down?
That's
already
just shocking,
seated, Justin.
Absolutely shocking. He doesn't remember what happened. What he said in 2017.
Now, Josh, do you think that it's he doesn't remember, and then he's got this flavor of senility, or that this is just his reaction to things that are really amazing and big and scary? He just says, "I didn't know, and nobody ever knew." Like, what do you think is going on here with Donald Trump?
I think he's controlling the mic. He probably doesn't remember ever saying it, but he's also got to be in the microphone saying things, and he's just got to be able to keep the mic going to basically. He's controlling the mic is what he's doing. So he's just blabbing on as long as possible without having any substance behind what he's saying.
We have some experience with just having the mic at our face and, you know, needing to keep talking.
Yeah.
I don't think that we have never said nobody's ever known that we've ever talked about knowing ever. I'm getting real meta here, but even when there's a microphone in front of your face, and even when there's something amazing and awful happening, I feel like I would remember having announced it before and announced that reaction 2 years prior and not say that exact same thing as if it's the first time I'm actually uttering it.
Right. I've had the experience before where I found out about a thing and then I forgot about a thing and then I found out about the thing again. That has happened to me.
Well,
before.
You are Floridian. So.
I'm also blonde. I'm not the president of the United States. And that's kind of the thing with this here is like the controlling the mic thing. I do think it is that. I think it's also partially that he just doesn't actually care to lead. Like he doesn't know what's involved in the first responders. He doesn't know what Florida is going to need. He's never thought about what Florida is going to need. He doesn't care about Puerto Rico. He just doesn't give a damn.
So what are the kinds of things that people need in the lead up to a major storm or in the aftermath of a major storm?
Beer.
I was going to say that. But yeah, okay. So having lived in, I lived in Florida from like very late 2002, early 2003 until 2013.
So you got your share of major storms, whether they were hurricanes or not. But you even got, I think, a Category 5 landfall at your state during the time that you were living there.
Right. But this is kind of the point that I can't remember which storm that was, because this happens every year, multiple times a year, just about every year. So at a certain point, it just becomes a joke. Like, oh, hurricane party. And that's kind of like the culture that grows up, that gets built up around Florida. And then you have people from other places like, OMG, Category 5 hurricane. And then Floridians are like, okay, it'll be even windier. It'll be even rainier, but it's not really something that, wait, there are people that prepare, there are stores that sell out of their water, but generally speaking, it's not something that like the Florida culture takes all that seriously, outside of the basic kinds of preparations that people are going to do anyway. Plywood up over the windows, doing some sandbags, that kind of thing. So if Trump wanted to show real leadership on this, there would be, I'm almost certain he's got an acting FEMA director. I'm not positive on that, but I'm almost certain. If he wanted to show some leadership on this, he could have learned from the mistakes that he made during Puerto Rico and Maria when that hurricane came down. Taken internally the criticism of the lack of preparedness and the failure in the response after that, and then established a plan so that it doesn't, so that we can just make fun of him for having said this goofy thing, rather than there also being, this guy is actually in charge of this. And like, if this does turn into a catastrophe, it's going to be a catastrophe because he's not going to have a plan.
I think one of the things that accounts for him not reflecting on the failures of, in post-Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico is because he doesn't see them as failures. He sees those folks in Puerto Rico as speaking a different language, fundamentally not Americans. He's ticked off that so many of them came to Florida and are now able to vote within Florida elections, possibly making it a swing state, a real swing state against him. And he does not see his actions in Puerto Rico as a failure. He sees the reason that Puerto Rico was in such dire straits as a function of the dysfunction of Puerto Rico's, government and preparedness systems beforehand.
And there was some of that. There was some dysfunction in their government. But the problems with FEMA are not the problems with the Puerto Rican government. Two things can exist at the same time, and I think Trump has some serious problems with that.
Well, here's a thing that Trump didn't actually get involved in, but is super weird and also gives me a little bit of deja vu. A Christian congregation gathered before the weekend for a beachfront prayer session aimed at protecting the city of Jacksonville from the power of Hurricane Dorian. The group used hymns and Bible readings to rebuke the Category 5 storm, telling it to calm down. Congregant and prayer session organizer Mary Parker had said in 2017, during a similar event aimed at dismantling Hurricane Irma, that scripture tells Christians that they can speak storms to quiet down, like Jesus did. And noted then that Jacksonville residents care about the beaches, don't want any more erosion, and don't want any more destruction of property or families dying.
Well, their hearts are in the right place, and at least they're not shooting at it.
Oh, that'd be funny.
Shooting at the hurricane?
Yeah.
Well, that's only because they don't actually possess nuclear weapons, because, they're taking their marching orders from Donald Trump. If they were in possession of nuclear weapons, they would want to throw the nukes into the hurricane,
right?
Oh,
yeah, we cannot allow Floridians to obtain nuclear weapons.
Sad news, they already have them.
So I want to ask you guys, deep personal reflection, okay? And
uh-oh.
Forgive me if this hits a little too personal, but have you ever been in a verbal altercation with someone that you cared about? Have you ever been in a fight with a loved one? Have you ever been, at the top of your anger and you're just, things are just like getting to you and the person you're arguing with is just seems so irrational and you've just said, calm down.
It works like a charm.
Yeah, it works every time.
Yeah, the other person just totally de-escalates. And absolutely. It's like, you know what? You're completely, every time. Yeah.
They never fly off the handle after that.
Yeah. I've never been able to figure out why it's so, why it takes me so long to realize that I can just say calm down.
So what I'm really scared of here, knowing that calm down is
sarcastic, by the way.
Yeah. Not,
don't say that.
Not the magic words. I'm worried that they're actually escalating Hurricane Dorian. They're saying, hello, hurricane, just calm down. And it's going to rile up the hurricane a little bit more. I mean, who knows? The hurricane could like start throwing some things against the wall. The hurricane might, you know, blow out its voice, yelling even louder. I mean, it's already got 165 mile an hour sustained winds. This is not a good plan, Christian Beach Vigil people.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that it can't be a Category 6.
Oh, because no one's ever heard of that before. That's a true statement.
Oh no. That's what he's going to say next week.
You're predicting that
Trump's going to say next week.
We'll say that it was a Category 6.
Believe me, folks, it could have been a Category 6. We slowed it down. That's what he's going to say.
So he will now become a meteorologist and invent a new hurricane rating scale.
Nobody knows meteors like me.
I just add on to the old one. I mean, the storms are getting worse, so I mean, eventually they probably will create a Category 6.
Oh boy, yeah,
that's true. It's really it's a tough thing to be thinking about. A tough thing to be hearing from who the person that should be our leader, the person that people look to and look for leadership from, more than just throwing rolls of paper towels.
Nobody I know looks to this guy for leadership, but we are supposed to be able to look to the president for leadership.
So you
this
were,
guy, hit or miss.
You were saying, Justin, that sometimes in Florida you kind of have hurricane party, right?
Yes.
Sometimes there's beer involved, things like that. Does it look like a prayer vigil at a beach where everyone's in a circle and waving their hands back and forth? And
no, it looks like a bunch of people in bathing suits with flip-flops on, with several coolers filled up with ice. Like, you don't get the ice to keep the stuff in the freezer cold. You get it to keep the beer cold.
So has that ever achieved, you know, sort of a de-escalation of the fight with the hurricane? You know, all you need to do is a hurricane party and then everybody like just mellows out more and hurricane, you know, makes landfall as a category three.
It's not about slowing the hurricane down. It's about having fun during it. That's the whole thing.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a different kind of vigil that caught my eye this week. And you know, usually when we say vigils, there's something that's super serious that's happened. And certainly there have been very serious things that have happened this week that have prompted people to gather as a community and hold vigils. Things that have been really unspeakable and unthinkable violence. But this one's a little different. A senior citizen in Cartersville, Georgia, has been asked to stop praying with customers of the grocery store where she works as a cashier, prompting her supporters to mount a parking lot prayer vigil outside Ingles Supermarket. Barbara Crow is said to touch the hands of patrons while handing them their receipts and ask if she can pray for them. Management reportedly asked the woman, known by customers as Ms. Barbara, to halt her practice after a customer complained that her prayer sessions were leading to long lines at the store. One vigil attendee told local reporters that some people come into the store without making purchases just to go through Ms. Barbara's line in the hopes that she'll pray for them. Ingles management has not offered a formal response as of yet.
So how old is Ms. Barbara?
Ms. Barbara's 75. So she's a senior citizen. She's been employed by the supermarket for 5 years. It kind of seems like a...
Wow, that's a late time in life to make a change.
It does seem as such. What it actually calls to mind for me is the high rate of senior citizens in our country who are struggling with things like food insecurity. Social Security isn't enough to help sustain them through their retirement. You know, you're not ready to enter into, you know, like assistive care that, you know, Medicaid would pay for. But at the same time, you don't have the savings. And a lot of our senior citizens in America are struggling with poverty. But at the same time, I don't think that means that you start having your prayer sessions at your place of work.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't begrudge Ms. Barbara for wanting to pray, or even for the praying for some people, if that's like a thing that they like. Okay, all right. But you got to kind of try and get the job done too. And then the response to management being like, hey, could you not, maybe, because we've got this whole line thing going on, to have that response include a parking lot prayer vigil when she wasn't fired. She was just kind of, hey, could you stop? It brings to mind to me a Supreme Court case that's going to be coming up fairly soon. There's a trans woman got fired from her funeral home job years ago now. Well, it was 2013, I believe. It's finally getting up to the Supreme Court, and that's going to have legitimate consequences as to whether or not trans folks have civil rights that prevent them from being fired, as opposed to this lady freaking out about, you know, could you please stop doing that?
Well, Ms. Barbara wasn't fired.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. She wasn't fired, but a parking lot prayer vigil for her.
Well, and you know that there are cries of, oh, her religious freedom was interfered with and things like that. I don't think that the supermarkets would have any kind of case if they said, you know what, not even on your bathroom breaks and smoke breaks can you go pray. Like, that is up to you. When you're on your lunch breaks and your smoke Absolutely. Breaks and your bathroom breaks, that is up to you. If you want to go into the parking lot or across the street on public sidewalks and hold prayer vigils then,
right.
That's cool. But, like, as a function of your job within the business to say, I'm going to pray for each of my customers, and then to invite and entertain folks that aren't even making purchases just to, like, walk through your line.
Right. While you've got other people in your line holding, like, tubs of ice cream. And it's like, could we hurry this up, please?
Yeah.
Okay, now they're messing with ice cream. Yeah, no, this can't stand. No, but yeah.
You're going down, Barbara.
I can't stand for melted ice cream. That makes me mad. But yeah, the thing is, it's like she's hurting the business by doing this. Like,
oh, so capitalism versus religion? No, capitalism wins.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, this new instance of religion is very capitalistic, so it's kind of weird to see, like, this little, like...
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a big issue with the man, quote unquote, asking her to not do this. But I mean, like, you're literally not doing your job.
Or you're doing your job plus. I mean, imagine if any of us were employed as a clerk in a supermarket and someone was coming through our line to talk about what we were going to do on the show, right? Because this is something we do on the side, like prayer is something that people do on the side. And someone was coming into the supermarket where I hypothetically worked. Right, Josh, you came through, you weren't purchasing anything, but you waited in line, and then once it was your turn, we just had a conversation about what we were going to talk about and Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, right?
And then I'm sitting here with my melting ice cream.
Yeah, that would not fly. I mean, that would be terrible. I would be a bad customer for getting in line to do that, and it would be bad on the attendee to actually be doing this and humoring such behavior, because that's what they're there for.
So it doesn't even matter the content of whatever you're doing, whether it's religious in nature, whether it's praying for a customer, whether it's talking about what you're going to do on the weekend, whether it's visiting your boyfriend and girlfriend and having a little chat in the line of when you're right. Like, it doesn't matter. The management is completely within their rights to say, no, could you not do that right now? Yeah, here's the other thing. She would hand you your receipt and then grasp your hand and say, may I pray for you?
That would make me literally squeal.
And not with joy?
Not with joy. I do not like people in public just like randomly touching me. I was at the grocery store a couple of weeks ago and this lady just insisted on giving me a bag. Right. She didn't even touch me. She just insisted on giving, like, putting my stuff into a bag. It was like one thing. And I ended up having to take the thing out of the bag, deliberately removing the bag and then putting it down on the counter while maintaining eye contact for her to, like, get the point that I don't want her dang bag. Like, handing the receipt and then grabbing my hand to pray for me. Oh, no.
So was the thing that you were purchasing, was it a carton of ice cream, Justin? Were you worried that it was going to... Maybe she was just putting it in a bag so that you wouldn't have to have...
I plead the fifth.
Body heat melting your carton of ice cream.
I plead the fifth.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC. We're here to answer your questions, and we'll be back after the break.
Hey,
Hello and welcome back. You know, Josh, you started out by saying your summer's finally getting started. I'm feeling a little summery here. Yeah?
Yeah, it's pretty warm and humid in this room right now.
Well, no comment. Apart from taking full responsibility, we've got a few inquiries from listeners. Nadia from the internet says, is it possible that bad people and good people are equal after they die? Josh?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing after death that I believe, so I would say, yeah, they're definitely equal.
Justin?
Oh, well, I used to work as a gravedigger for a couple of years when I lived in Florida. And
wait, really? Seriously?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I worked here as a gravedigger for about a year and a half.
But have you not done
so it? I can tell you from experience that what happens to both good people and bad people after they die is that you end up with a guy looking kind of like me throwing dirt on your vault.
Okay, so that's kind of equal, right?
Yeah, it's very equal.
The interesting thing here is it possible? Well, I mean, that's from a literal perspective. It is very possible that bad people and good people are equal after they die because they're dead. I would wager that they're just meat at that point. They're just dead meat, right? In terms of like asking whether something else happens in sort of this grand, you know, cosmological scheme of equalizing the scales, that's a question that really begs a belief in a soul or some kind of cosmic weigher of things. And that's something that, as an atheist, I don't believe in.
I wonder if Nadia isn't asking more about, like, in a sort of my heart will go on kind of way, like what it is that you're leaving behind. Because I will say that there were definitely differences between people who didn't have family and then people who did have family. So you could tell. Well, I'm talking again about when I was a gravedigger. From the physicality aspect of it, no, not really anything different. But there was a big difference in the people who you leave behind and how they respond to it.
So in terms of when good people die or when bad people die, what's going to be the memory and the legacy of that person?
Right, the legacy.
And eventually the legacy is going to go away. Unless you're like a super important person in life.
Well, sure. But I mean, after everyone, you know, dies, like,
yeah. Whether you were a good person or a bad person, eventually you're going to be forgotten unless you had a massive impact on society as itself.
Now, I would beg that there's a difference between being forgotten. You know, in 300 years, people won't know who Becky Friedman is necessarily, right? But the legacy isn't gone because of whomever you've impacted.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, I don't need to be remembered by name. I would like the impact of whatever I had, the positive impact, to persist and then be taken, be you know, chewed up in weird, more pertinent ways and then bestowed upon others.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good thing to keep in mind as you go through your life. Like, what are you leaving a positive or a negative impact on the people that are around you? What kind of perception?
Exactly. We've got another inquiry from Greg from Wisconsin. And Greg asks, why do theists insist that atheism is a religion? Well, Greg, you're listening to Ask an Atheist, so we can't really, from a personal perspective, answer the question that you're asking about theists, but we can certainly describe our own experience with some of those arguments that we've gotten thrown our way, right?
Yeah, so from my perspective, it's they're trying to defang one of our arguments by saying, because we're anti-religious, by saying that we are religious, we're basically arguing against ourselves. It's just a way to have an argument without actually having an argument.
It's a way to kind of point fingers and say, ha ha, you're so hypocritical.
Yeah, you're just like us, one of us.
Okay.
I think it's a perceptual thing. Like, Greg, if you can, open your eyes and look directly in front of you and try to imagine what it looks like directly behind you, but don't turn your head or turn your eyes. Like, you can't really visualize what behind you looks like because your brain doesn't do that. Your eyes can't see back there, but you can turn your head and then see what behind you is. So if you're a religious person, you have a certain way of looking at the world, and then you can't really imagine what it is that another way of looking at the world really is. And like that, this is less of a physicality, like blind as to vision type thing, more of like a ideological perceptual type deal. And I think that that's the trap that theists fall into, is that they have just a limited scope of ways that they are able to view the world. And unless something changes with that, they're just going to think that we're doing the same thing that they are, because that's literally the only way that they can see it.
There's also legal reasons why a theist might be bolstered in their argument that atheism is just another religion, which, by the way, I don't think any of us have argued or agree with. The fun responses are, yeah, and bald is a hair color, you know, and not stamp collecting is a hobby, right? Like, list all of your hobbies. You can be a stamp collector, you can be a bicyclist, you can be a quilter, you can be, but there's no hobby. My hobby is not stamp collecting. That's not a hobby. Just like atheism is a lack of belief in God isn't a religion, right?
Somebody's going to make it a hobby. What do you do for fun and not other things? Well, it brings me great enjoyment to not do things.
Exactly. Well, but from a legal perspective, atheists with our worldview have a right to protection from discrimination based on creed, because it is a way of viewing the world, a way of looking at and having a cosmological perspective on things. When someone says it's just another religion, you're replacing the idea of having a worldview of how we think the world works as by default a religion. And the fact is that atheism is that not stamp collecting. I'm much more comfortable, actually, with humanism being regarded as another religion if it weren't used as a cudgel by folks like Josh had said, where people will say, like, haha, you're a hypocrite. But as a designated worldview that is, you know, deserving of respect
and legal protections.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, you can be a utilitarian who's also a Christian. Or what's another type of philosophy? A Kantian, who's also a Christian. You can have all of these different philosophies within the overarching ideology of a religion. You can be a progressive Jewish person, a conservative Jewish person. Like, it's sort of the same thing with political views and personal philosophies and different ways that you think maybe things sort of work out as far as like a moral framework. The only thing of it is with atheists, there isn't one grand unifying thing like Judaism, Islam, Christianity, so on and so forth. It's just one thing different, but we're just like everybody else in all of the other ways. It's just the one thing.
I always liked the argument of, well, I'm an atheist just like you're an atheist. I just believe in one God fewer than you believe in, right? If there's, you know, 24,000 different beliefs in what God is, you know, you disbelieve in 23,999 of them, and I just disbelieve in one more than you do.
And that kind of goes back to the perceptual thing, because, like, I don't necessarily think that modern theists necessarily spend all that much time considering what it would be like to be someone who believed in the Roman pantheon of gods, like what their life would look like as a person who believed in that, or what their life would look like if they were a believer in Allah instead of the Christian God. Like, to be it is, you know, and when you get people who come up to your door and proselytize.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that I like to ask them is, like, have you ever considered what would happen if, I'm pretty sure the return mythology in Islam is like Muhammad coming down on a horse or something like that through the clouds. So I ask them, if you looked up right now and you saw that, you saw Muhammad coming through the clouds on a horse, would that change your mind? And so the way that I'm trying to frame this to them is like physical evidence of a thing, of their thing being wrong. And the one person who I'd asked this to, or the one couple, not a couple, but, you know, a pair that I had asked this to so far would be like, well, our book says, and I'm like, I'm not asking about your book. I'm asking, if you see a thing that is not what your book says, what would you do? And they didn't have a good answer for it because they'd never actually thought about it. Whereas if I actually saw that, well, one, I'd check out if I was delusional. And if I'm not like having some sort of hallucinogenic episode, then it's like, well, I guess I was wrong about that.
And it kind of means to demonstrate that there are things that can change the mind of someone. Mm-hmm. When your mind, just because you are an atheist, it doesn't mean that your mind is closed. It doesn't mean that you're,
right.
you're just not someone who believes in all of the other religious traditions that, you know, other folks believe in.
Yeah. And theists just don't spend too much time thinking about or talking about that kind of thing because they're convinced that their thing is right.
Yeah, in a lot of cases with the door knockers, I would say that's definitely my experience. I want to bring us to a place that gives me a little more deja vu again. We've visited this place on our show before in our conversations, and that's Northern Arizona, because a federal circuit court panel has affirmed a 2016 judge's ruling that the small Arizona town of Colorado City violated the constitutional rights of apostates of the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints sect that essentially ran all town government. The panel concluded that overwhelming evidence showed how Colorado City officials deprived non-FLDS residents of their constitutional rights by selectively enforcing the law based upon religion, arresting non-FLDS members without probable cause, employing a church-based security team nicknamed the God Squad to help church officials avoid the FBI, and trusting sect leaders to appoint city officials and safety marshals, and denying apostates access to water utilities.
Not a cult.
No, definitely not a cult.
This is definitely not a cult, so nothing to see here.
Good. This is like 101, Exhibit A, in what happens if you let an ideology wholesale take over your town. These kinds of things are what go on. And there's another example of this kind of thing happening in Rockland, right? And there was a story that broke recently about the Rockland GOP posting an anti-Semitic video about the city officials in that area. And while it would be easy to point to the FLDS and be like, oh, haha, Mormons, I think it's important to be more specific. And that's where the GOP dropped the ball.
And so you're talking about with this Rockland, this is in New York, right?
Yeah.
So you have folks that are ultra-Orthodox Jews that have, you know, congregated in their living spaces in one particular area of town, become right, very politically right. powerful.
Uh-huh. And they have influence over like the school board and the influence over this thing and that thing. And you can take the route of what the GOP did and go like full anti-Semitic propaganda.
It was scary. I was listening to it. It was this, you know, highly produced video that
right.
had all of these, you know, buzzwords that really rang of a very ugly, you know, racist, anti-Semitic, right. You know, white supremacist sort of feels to it.
Right. And so you can go that way and then you'll rightly get called out for anti-Semitism, or you can go the way that the federal government did with the FLDS. Gather evidence. This is what you did. This is what we have proof of. This is what we have evidence for. This is who you hurt. And then you bring a court case and give them their due process. You can bring it. You can take two paths there. One of them is fair. One of them is anti-Semitism. Rockland GOP, take a memo from what happened here in Colorado City and how that was addressed.
And, you know, we want to give Colorado City and the neighboring town that sort of straddled into Utah a little bit of context here. This fundamentalist Latter-day Saints sect was led by Warren Jeffs. He is serving long time right now in prison.
Finally.
Yeah, for arranging, you know, child marriages. I mean, he's essentially the leader of a child molestation ring. On top of that, then have the rest of the town be doing things like anyone who is an apostate, well, you're shunned from our community, but hey, you've lived your entire life here. You have no money. Where are you going to go? They're going to still live in the
yeah.
town, but oh, we're just going to make it as difficult as possible for you by
we'll
not
shut off your water.
Yeah, like, that kind of really, really ugly things. That's in some respects separate from the abominable acts of this sect leader.
Right?
Isn't that like called statistic terrorism?
I think so at this point. And I'm glad that this is upheld. And the thing is that the original rulings and then this panel, these are by judges that were appointed by Reagan, by Bush, and by Clinton. This is not a party thing. These are fair judges that have looked at the facts, looked at what our constitutional laws do protect in terms of your freedom of religion, and said, no, this is not it. You're not allowed to with your entire church, make the church security team the exact same people and same functions as your town police units.
Right,
you're not allowed to.
Disgusting.
Yeah, you're not allowed to arrest apostates without probable cause just because they're on the outside of your own church and beliefs.
Just imagine. Imagine what the right wing type conservative media would be doing if this was
Islamic religion.
This is the same kind of thing, or atheist cops, like the secular humanists taking over a town and like running the police with their not God squad or something like that. Like they would be freaking out. Like what the FLDS did here was the kind of thing that they call no-go zones in Sweden. Mm. Like they're actually doing the thing that they're accusing other people of doing. But it's coming from conservatives in this country, so there's that weirdness about criticizing it out loud and openly. I mean, like, they are Mormon, so you will see, like, Republicans, conservatives saying, like, oh, wow, that. Mm. So there is that angle to it, but they are still conservative. So they're kind of shooting their own base there a little bit. That's why we don't hear too much about mainstream Republicans, like, jumping all over this as much as we see any kind of GOP action against Hasidic Jews. That's one thing. And then if there was like Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, they'll attack them for these kinds of things, but not really want to talk about it all that much when it's the FLDS.
I don't know that it's so much of the religion thing that you come from the same source religion, because modern Mormons and FLDS, they are really, you know, very different, even if they come from the same source religion. I'm not sure. It's not a color thing, honestly. But I'm not one to be able to actually judge the motivations of the individuals. I do want to bring us to something that is kind of a real fun team up between religious individuals and atheists. And it brings us a little closer to home, where a Portland area Methodist pastor, an atheist stripper, and an artist recently all teamed up to launch an awareness campaign focused on children affected by ICE raids in Mississippi. With the hashtag Sinners and Saints and Our Kids, Pastor Adam Erickson of Clackamas United Church of Christ, artist Lauren Seeley, and stripper Dawn McCall, who goes by the name Blue and bills her business as an altruistic stripper company, appeared in a Facebook Watch video. The group encouraged viewers to purchase t-shirts whose proceeds would benefit the Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance. They attributed their surprising collaboration to Portland, Oregon's tradition of keeping it weird, noting that we are each sinners and we are each saints and we rise up together to help hashtag our kids in Mississippi. This is a real fun mashup. I think it's really cool. And it's a way to look ecumenically through something more than just people that mutually believe in a religious philosophy. You're involving an atheist and you're having someone who is a religious person, a religious leader who's willing to team up, be seen in public with an atheist, and an atheist in a field of work that one may definitely consider to be a, you know, entrepreneuring businesswoman or something that's a little bit less savory seen. I think the Pacific Northwest's pretty chill about whether someone has a stripping entertainment or adult entertainment company, but still it's kind of a neat thing, right?
Yeah. I like this past, like, regardless of how you feel about sex work broadly, it's important to think about like what it is that they're trying to accomplish here. And it's a pastor and a stripper that are putting their heads together and an artist putting their heads together in order to enact some good in the world. That's the overall goal.
Yeah, to actually address a bad thing that's actually happening instead of what people keep focusing on.
Like, here's what we do for money. Here's a way we can possibly help. Let's put our heads together and actually do that and help.
What it really brings to mind for me is back to when the DNC recognized secular humanists as having a moral base and having proposing just general universal humanistic values. And whether you are a pastor or an atheist, there is a universal humanistic value that when you see a child hurting, you say, we need to help that child. And I just wish that we would have more of that as we're able to, fight back against the kinds of actions that we see that are being, promoted and enacted by our leaders that are really quite distressing. Well, Justin, Josh, thank you guys for joining me on Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
You are listening to us. You can find us online at atheist.radio. Email us at questions@atheist.radio. Find us on Twitter at AskAnAtheistWA and on Facebook at the same place. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Happy back to school time. End of summer. We'll see you guys next week.